They tell you to watch out for the ones who put their hands on your knee under the table or the ones who corner you in the break room. They give you HR seminars on unwelcome contact and physical boundaries. But nobody warns you about the men who treat your reputation like a piece of wet clay, molding it into something unrecognizable without ever laying a single finger on your skin. Julianne was an architect. But he didn't just design the skyscrapers that define the Paris skyline. He designed environments of psychological claustrophobia. I moved from Beirut to Paris with a degree in structural engineering and a hunger that I thought would be my greatest asset. I landed a junior associate role at Vaugrenard & Company. And for the first 6 months, I thought I'd hit the lottery. Julian was brilliant, soft-spoken, and possessed that effortless French elegance that makes you feel like you're constantly auditioning for his approval. He never raised his voice. He never made an inappropriate joke. He was, by all public accounts, a gentleman. But power doesn't need hands to crush you. It just needs implication. It started with the late-night emails that weren't about work, but weren't not about work. He'd send a link to an obscure Lebanese poem or a photo of a sunset over the Seine with a caption like, "This reminded me of the rhythm in your last presentation. You have a soul that the others here lack, Maya." It was flattering at first. A slow drip of ego stroking that made me feel like his chosen protege. Then came the private strategy sessions. He'd call me into his office at 6 p.m., click the lock on the heavy oak door, a sound that echoed like a gunshot in the quiet suite, and then he'd sit across the room. He'd stay behind his desk, 10 feet of expensive wood between us, and he'd just watch me. He wouldn't talk about the Marseille project. He'd ask me how I felt about the concept of loyalty. He'd tell me that the other partners thought I was too aggressive, too Middle Eastern in my negotiation style, but that he was protecting me. He'd say, "They see a firebrand, Maya. I see a woman who needs the right hand to guide her, but only if she wants to be guided." He never moved toward me. He never touched my hand, but the air in that room would get so thick I could taste the copper in my mouth. The shift happened when I tried to set a boundary. I stopped replying to the late-night soul-searching emails. I started leaving my office door open. I made sure a third person was always in the room when we discussed the blueprints. That's when the implication turned into a weapon. Julian didn't get angry. He got mournful. He started mentioning me in partner meetings with a sigh. He'd say things like, "Maya is talented, but I worry about her stability. She's become preoccupied. We spent a long time talking about her personal distractions last night." He said it with a wink, a tiny infinitesimal tilt of the head that told every man in that room exactly what he wanted them to believe. He was suggesting we were having an affair to explain why I was getting the best assignments, while simultaneously suggesting I was mentally fragile to ensure I could never be promoted past him. He was building a cage out of whispers. I remember standing in the kitchenette, pouring a coffee, when one of the senior architects, a man I'd respected for months, walked in and looked me up and down with a smirk I'll never forget. "Julianne says you're quite the handful after hours," he said, his voice dripping with a disgusting kind of camaraderie. I didn't know the Beirut girls were so dedicated to the craft. I felt like I'd been doused in ice water. I went straight to Julianne's office. I didn't wait for an invite. I slammed the door. I didn't lock it. And I told him he needed to stop. I told him I knew what he was telling the partners. Julian didn't blink. He leaned back in his leather chair, laced his fingers behind his head, and smiled. It was a kind, paternal smile that made my skin crawl. "Maya, I haven't said a word that wasn't true," he whispered. "We have spent hours alone. You have shared your heart with me in those emails. If people draw conclusions, that is simply the tax you pay for being so close to power. I haven't touched you. I haven't harassed you. In fact, if you go to HR, I'll simply show them the poem you thanked me for last month. I'll show them how I've mentored you. Who will they believe? The man who has been here 20 years, or the girl who is unstable?" The lesson I learned in those halls wasn't about glass ceilings. It was about glass walls. You can see through them, but you'll break your nose trying to walk through. He controlled my reputation by denying he was doing anything at all. He played the victim of my intensity. Every time I tried to defend myself, it only made me look like the crazy woman he'd painted me to be. The gaslighting was so precise it was surgical. He didn't need to touch my body to violate my career. He just needed to occupy the space in people's minds where my integrity used to live. I eventually left Vaugrenard, but the whispers followed me to two other firms. He'd made sure of that with a few concerned phone calls to his peers. I had to learn the hard way that the most dangerous predators aren't the ones who grab, they're the ones who shadow box with your life until you don't recognize yourself anymore. Power doesn't need hands. It just needs a story and a room with a locked door.